Okay, let's bring this meeting to order. Newburyport Conservation Commission, December 20th, 2011. First item on the agenda, the minutes from December 6th. Any comments, questions?
Only the misspelling in the beach access qualifier. Should be access instead of assess.
Yes.
Oh.
We did assess it.
There was for the 6 Francis Drive, we did. Oh, there's the. All right, I didn't see the issue negative. Never mind. Anybody else have any?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next item, wetlands ordinance. That has been moved on. Andy, that was part of that whole pile of things they voted on at once.
Yeah, I made sure that they carried it over so we let them resubmit or anything. The next planning and development committee meeting, the subcommittee city council, is on January 18th. I really talked about the issues that night. I haven't gotten any confirmation from Mary, the chair of the committee, that they would take up the wetlands ordinance that night, but I believe they should be able to. There's only 2 items on their agenda that night. One of them is the Story Avenue rezoning, which has a couple of components to it, but ultimately it's just the rezoning of that to residential property there. The other one is some definitions relative to lot shape and width and so forth in the zoning ordinance. So for those 2 items, they should be able to take on at least some discussion of what was ordinance that night. But I haven't been able to get Barry to confirm that, so maybe with you and I, I wish to him, we know that, and get him to nail down that he won't be pushed off either after that, or he won't have the schedule move before that to accommodate us. I mean, they should be able to do that the same night. So that would be about it.
Okay. Also, if you saw in your email, I forwarded you stuff from John Eric White, the city engineer, which only is going to really affect the regulations. He was apparently a whole bunch of, or some other communities have used the Cornell numbers, but they use totally different Cornell numbers, or they look at it on the website or whatever it is, and we'll just...
Is that a moving target, the Cornell numbers? Or, I mean, if you say we like the Cornell numbers.
Yeah, whether you use the published atlas or whether you use the website, I think there's like newer numbers on the website, and he's more interested in using the published atlas. And
just some have their preferences too, and some engineers have their own preferences.
Yeah, I just think if we're going to be requesting and requiring it or whatever, we maybe ought to be let people know what it is we're requiring so we know what we need to. Right?
Yeah, and the numbers he was talking about were actually slightly higher than the numbers we have, 0.1 or 0.2 inches.
More conservative than in terms of...
Yeah, and, I don't have an issue with coordinating with them and having the same numbers, but... Since it's in the regs, it's easy to take care of. All right. Next item, the beach access walkover, gangway. Are we done with that, Andy?
The walkway?
Yeah.
For the residents, there's 3 residents now that are signing on to that plan for removal. The 3 of them have it. I emailed it out to them, so they're signing it. I don't have it back. The 1 resident was going to drop it off for me. So I was hoping to be able to give that to you tonight. Until I have that back, it's Alison Harquist, Kelsey Buck, who was out there, involved with some of the discussion out there when we were talking about the gangway a long time ago. And then a gentleman, well, not just a little bit, Eric, I think his last name is Domestic Doors. At any rate, they'll all be signed, and I know all that for the next meeting because they're signing right now. But I'm meeting the contractor on, Friday morning, I believe, to go over the process by which it's rolled up. There's a winch system to roll it up. So I'm going to go through that with them then, and then we'll redo it again because we're keeping it up for the winter. We'll do it again in the spring so that
Next item, the update on the appeal of 17 Graff Road. You guys all got the letter. So, what do you have, like 70 days or something for them to respond to?
The 17 Graff Road?
Yeah.
There was a two-page letter from DEP with a couple of requests, and it's basically the applicant's hand to respond back. I know that they said they would. I haven't seen it, they get a copy of their response, but it's in their hands to respond back about this, the question to DEP.
Okay.
Yeah. 70 calendar days or 70 working days?
I believe it's calendar days, yeah. I think the... It depends on which regulation subset we're looking at, how they calculate. I believe this one is calendar days, though.
Alright. Discussion regarding the industrial park improvements, soils, etc. I guess you guys saw the write-up in the Daily News, the link that I sent you. There seemed to be some misconceptions as to what's happening out there, to say the least. So,
I don't want to give too much of an update of the history of what we're doing.
Say again?
I don't know if you want me to give an update.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe's been involved as far as the flood study, too. But there's two aspects of things going on there. One is the flood study, which Joe's been very involved with the review of. I actually just got a copy of their final. Version, which I've not had a chance to read through the whole thing yet, but it's basically meant to analyze the flooding issues down there, recommend some changes and things that we can do to improve the situation, even though it can't be perfected, given that we were in a low-lying area with lots of coverage. So that the plan was to replace a culvert at Parker, and there was dialogue about raising roads and that sort of thing, but it doesn't sound like that's the best thing to be doing. The swales, there's been a lot of talk about the swales, so probably over the years before I got here, there's a lot of talk about maintaining the swales and that sort of thing. So a lot of the talk has been about maintaining some of the drainage swales that have become overgrown with vegetation or have been filled up with silt and so forth. So that's part of the dialogue. And so there was some mention of that in the article, but the plan is that to develop a master plan for going back to what used to be maintenance of the swales and never really done adequately. Coming up with a comprehensive plan for the location of those swales, what needs to be done to maintain them, and then doing some sort of filing with each property individually or collectively to try to maintain the swales and keep them from becoming a blocking point for the water traveling through the park. And so you may see something in the future along those lines, but that's up to the business owners to sort of coordinate themselves.
I've been somewhat confused, so I seem to find confused on this probably now. Are those swales jurisdictional wetlands?
I would agree that some of them are and some of them are not, depending on where you are. I would say generally speaking, they're all hydrologically connected, so you should certainly make a connection on those lines. But I think if you read the 5 points in the WPA and so forth, some of them are considered jurisdictional, some of them are not. There's wide debate, I'm sure, historically over that particular issue.
Yeah, because I remember a couple of years ago that there was some applicant wanting to have them all declared non-jurisdictional.
Yeah, I wouldn't say...
We said no to that, because that was just too
long. Yeah, I don't think we can declare all of them non-jurisdictional, but I think that there are some sections that are clearly jurisdictional, but there are some sections that are just, man-made, sections that convey the water, and so the question is defining which sections those are, and coming up with a plan that says definitively, these things need to be maintained as grass swales and these sections need to be treated as a resource area. We don't want them touching wetland areas, but I'm not sure how much benefit some of those areas would be for maintaining a thin strip of Phragmites in the middle of the industrial park. Is that really going to be a benefit environmentally? I don't think so. And there's other sections we want to keep in, keep out of time with you, but there's some sections that I think that if they're just mowing them periodically as a grass area, that's larger than they've been over the decades anyway. It's probably not going to have a whole lot of impact on habitat. As long as the water quality coming out is clean and they're not having increased saltation and things like that, then probably not going to see the impact on the environment. So.
Does this cover the entire industrial park area, or is it the city industrial park, in a made industrial park?
That's a good question, actually, and that has not been resolved. So another one of those questions would have to be, you know, what area are we encompassing? If there's going to be some sort of filing, are we considering the entire area of filing, or are we considering only the Dexter Industrial, you know, park, or these different names like Nage, you know, compositional parcels? That has not been determined yet. The flood study says basically they're all somehow relevant, some of them more than others. But there hasn't been any plan put together yet saying what would be covered, which property owners might participate in some sort of filing or not. So, until those businesses really talk about who wants to be involved, who doesn't, and look at a plan for that, there really isn't anything to look at. But yeah, you're right. One of the questions should be, are we talking about a watershed type definition of that boundary, or is it just a question of who's participating there or not? You know, which businesses are participating, which should be kind of a piecemeal way.
Because the name properties have covenants on them, the city ones.
They
don't.
Do, and one of the things that I feel an obligation to do is to spend some time looking through those and finding out what the covenant requirements were. So I've yet to be able to do that. I'm starting to compile those things. There's some volumes of information at the library we'll be taking a look at. Some of the business owners are getting from that, but they have a record. And I'm looking through our record files, which are, in my opinion, somewhat incomplete. So we're looking at those as well to find out what the prior permits have been, who's down the bar from the city, from the commission, but also on the private side, who is held, who is responsible for maintaining what, you know, collectively or, you know, one property or another. And I just don't have enough information on that right now. I'm still looking through some of that little historical stuff.
Yeah, one might be GPS, one might be private.
Exactly. And so the map will help out with that because they have mapped some of those things and we'll be overlaying that to define which things are city, you know, which things are private and who is private. And then looking at along those same lines, you know, the covenants, you know, whose property they apply to, you know, who they granted to, you know, control who's granted to, but what kind of permits would be issued previously, where areas those prior permits cover. There's a lot of overlays that, you know, we need to look at before we decide how best to resolve or clear up this question going forward. And I haven't had a chance to look through all those different documents. I actually haven't had all of them yet. There's a couple of gentlemen that I've spoken to down there. I'm still waiting for them to send me what they have. So until I have that in hand, I don't know if they'll tell you what I think about what's been done historically versus what you might be able to do now.
I'd like to see a map of what's made in what city. I've never seen a map of that.
That, you know, I will endeavor to try to get you a map for that for the next meeting, so at least we'll have that as a framework moving forward, because there is, it depends on which time period you're looking at as well, what's covered in date. So I will try to get that for you for the next meeting, so have some sort of a background on that.
And one other thing that flooding study meeting that Doug Packer and I were at with a bunch of city officials, it seemed to me one thing they're stressing is there are a lot of constrictions downstream. So in the big storms, the changes aren't going to make much of a difference. It's not going to make any difference, really, unless it backs up there more, but it's everything further downstream that's the issue, and it's moving upstream, backing everything up that way. I'm still not totally convinced, and we made it quite clear to them that they need to make it easily understandable what they're doing and why it's important.
They being who?
Malcolm Pierney and the, you know, with the whole
engineer,
right? With regards to, especially with regards to swapping out the culverts under Parker Street. So we pleaded with him to come up with something that's understandable. So.
You're talking about the question we had at the last meeting.
Yeah,
there was this question about showing as a model, if you're removing a blockage at Parker, what does that mean downstream? Is there a reason why that would just cause the problem to be shifted? The problem to be shifted further down towards the railroad, and they didn't really illustrate that response very well.
No.
So we said, please, you know, before you file with the commission, please understand that both of us, both of you, Newbury and the Newbury website, would be concerned about what does that actually mean. And I don't think either of us were really convinced there that the argument was there, but we felt that maybe if they illustrated that better by talking about it, they were trying to say that well, it'll all be kind of made up for if you remove this blockage at Parker Street. That water will flow through faster there, but it won't really make a difference downstream because of a bunch of other factors there. But they haven't really talked about those other factors.
So are they looking at the whole watershed or just the industrial park aspect of it? Or?
Well, they were looking at the park, and one of Joe's initial comments was they should be looking at the entire watershed further up, and they didn't do that comprehensively.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't include everything further upstream.
Yeah.
So I think their one of their main points was to, in these smaller storms, prevent Malcolm Hoyt from flooding. Whether that makes it any worse further downstream because there's more water pouring down into that area around the train station, I don't know. But I expect at some point we're going to find out. So I think that's about it for now. We'll see what they come up with. Any other questions on this?
Did you get a copy of the final report, the whole report that Malcolm Burney did?
The final? I don't know if I've seen the final.
Okay. I've been asking to send one to you or paper electronic or something like that.
Electronics, okay. All right. Let's add one here. We have a few minutes. David Santamena is here. We talked about the Oleo conservation restriction.
Thanks, Joe. I had sent a revised draft description around incorporating comments from the state, comments from the Springwell folks, and the comments that Doug had the last time around. And I'm just, let's see if there are any additional comments at this point or.
Did I forward that to people?
No.
I didn't. Sorry. Oh, Doug had.
I had at least indicated to Joe that I was not troubled by any of the changes, and I think the point that I raised last time was adequately dealt with. So I'm completely happy with what you've done.
Thanks.
That's worth.
It's worth a lot. The Springwell folks had the same comment.
So if you want to incorporate those things,
yeah.
Clean it up and send it out to us, and
okay.
We'll pass it around. I guess we can probably vote on the next meeting.
Okay.
So you're planning to distribute to Joe rather than Joe distribute to us? Okay.
I don't have everyone's email address, so.
Okay.
Or I can have
you. Send me, I can distribute it another way.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with a couple minutes we have left, I did also talk with Matt Kazaki about re-upping the agricultural agreement for the wet meadows. I also asked him to, if he would mow the backfield on Cooper North, and I told him that we'd probably incorporate that into the new agreement, so he would be doing that once a year, once the ground freezes. And he has no problem with that. He's very interested in getting that agreement for another 10 years since he uses those fields a lot. So I think Jordy's going to write that up and we'll send it around and take a look at it. Anybody have anything else?
Here's my one quick comment. We won't take any time, but the open space plan, we have a consultant who's going to be working on this to update it. Brown Walker Associates, they used to be Tanker Associates. Anyway, they'll be helping us with the open space plan update just because we don't have enough time with our resources right now to do it all. So I'll be working with you and the other boards and commissions and departments about the open space and the trail network layer for our mapping, and we'll include it in the updated plan. Because it's a lot more required that should be done now than was done in the previous plans. I think it's also going to be talking with you as well as the open space and part of the commission about what types of recommendations should be in the plan, what are our needs, and that sort of thing. So stay tuned. We'll sometime in the next year, we'll be looking for your feedback on where we came from the last plan and where we should be going forward for areas to acquire, CRs, things like that.
Okay. All right, then. Certificates of compliance, request determinations, final modifications, Number one, Union Specialties, request for a certificate of compliance, DEP file number 0510792. Do we have anybody here yet?
No, we're here. We're expecting them to follow up with us.
All right, and let's skip ahead to Tom Warren's 12 L Street, request for minor modification.
I had indicated on the agenda that I was expecting them to postpone this, and that's based on a conversation with their engineer.
You were a request on hold, Andy.
I'm not exactly sure. It sounds to me like a real estate transaction issue. You know, whether someone's going to follow through on the transaction, it may be renegotiated. So that's part of it. So whether or not they need a modification, it may be unnecessary if they go with someone new. I don't know. So that's what I'm going to too. So that's my understanding for the reason why we're going to be able to do. So I would suggest maybe continue the next meeting. If they don't show up at that point, just ask them to withdraw the signatures and they'll know when those types of...
Okay.
What's the date of the next meeting?
Is it the 3rd?
Third. Yeah. Third. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll continue it to... A motion to continue to January 3rd.
I second it.
All in favor?
Opposed?
Okay. Bill, are you here for Union Specialties?
I am.
Okay. You're up.
Okay. As far as I can ascertain, it appears that whoever approved that plan for Millennium made an error. If there was a berm, the berm was removed in 2003. That was an attempt. I have the plan from 2003. Which a certificate was issued for. Created by William Engineering. That's old, so hard to see, but you'll see. We'll start here.
You see that the berm only extended down to this point right here. These are all installed in the notice of intent. These, riprap swales that go down to the French drain, which runs along there. And the other thing I found, in 2008, we actually did a certificate on 200-something plan, and there it is on the site for me at that time. She signed off on that certificate in 2008, which was for 200-something. But I went online this afternoon and I pulled out the order of conditions, and that is the plan of record for the order of conditions. That is the as-built. This was planned that we had part way when I found that there are errors in the planting and everything. This was a punch list plan that we had. And this is the original plan that we had.
Do you sense that there's not a need to have the berm there? I mean, there's no such thing.
That's why those French drains were installed going through this. I spent about 2 hours this afternoon on this after talking to Erica. Said they must have made a mistake. And what it looks like to me is you can see the berm ends up here. But this is the edge of the painted because as a part of this notice, all this was repaved at that particular time. And these were, as you can see, were to be extended and go into the French drain thing. And this wetland up here, and I had actually forgotten, is actually partially replication and retention that we put in at that time, too. That's why the punch list plan that you need for that.
This shows a bituminous berm all the way down to here.
That ends
right,
there.
But that's the old one. This
So how many, just in terms of what's there now, Bill, how many errors are there? How many things are different from the record?
I think the only error on the record plan is showing the berm running out here because it was never intended to do that. It may have been way back, but I don't even find it recommended. I went through plans back to 87 today. Because I had this file. The first project that actually was started here, the file number was 1,100.
Right, no, it looks like that.
These are just continuous additions.
This so is, the
this
one we just
is where my
build.
Hand is.
Okay.
In the plan that they're looking for is different on now. That just carried.
They carried it into the asphalt right now.
That's the record.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one that's the certificate we're looking at.
Well, is this?
Yeah, and then.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah. I had thought that the concern was that more than on the southern side of the site, as you get further down towards the loading docks, and there's no burn, and the bad water would go up.
That's why the riprap was originally installed there. That was part of our original plan. The riprap went so that the water right on the front creek would dissipate into the riprap and then move down into the riprap.
This is going to be a certificate, and you can see that it's berm all the way down to Malcolm Point.
Right.
So it's not showing those the riprap or anything.
This is in right there, right by the cut place, someplace in there, or it's close to there.
Seems like
so the water, this water is going to flow into this riprap.
That's what that was for the concrete. And then this picks up the flow and brings it down to the catch basin.
But this is the berm, this part of the berm is installed. Right?
That is there.
Yes.
This is a complete error. Right?
Yeah, so we need that plan updated. To be what it is. It's probably going to look a lot like the other one.
Well, I can see that Gary has that because I talked to him this afternoon and I said, you guys, I'll stop. River Drive is a Druid messed up. Eric stamped his arm and said he didn't go out there and look at it very carefully. Sorry. So.
Apparently not.
I was very surprised when we talked about the difference. I mean, I've probably been on that site 6 or 8 times in the past 2 years, you know, between checking the vegetation. Like I said, actually, I was out there with Mary, too, because this little trench that we put in, that was an add-on to handle, that also handles the water right here, the kind of pockets at the back, bring it around and bring it into the detention area.
Did we go out? We didn't go out there.
Yeah,
you did.
Joe and I didn't. Jim.
Jim, yeah.
The rest of it.
Yeah, it looks like the other map, the other plan there. There's two riprap.
So then
they just extensions will be on the issue. Right.
Yeah. So I'll just get Eric to get his people go back out there and shoot the end of the barrel. That's the road.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, so shall we continue this?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the last one. I appreciate it very much. It's in the wrong place, wrong number.
All right, thank you.
Okay, hear a motion?
Motion to continue.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All right. Next item, Michael Bielby, 237 Northern Boulevard.
I think my building should be considered a bump out already, and I said, oh, maybe that changes things, maybe some sort of confusion, because the, I don't know if the commission members really get out there prior to the meeting. So I went out there, took a look. And these are the photographs that I took underneath to show what is actually supporting it. I told them I wasn't convinced that I would classify that as a piling per se. I think that was part of the one of the questions with the commission, is whether or not the new work that needs to be done in the existing house had to be raised up on pilings based on that additional work being done. And so anyway, these photographs are meant to show what is supporting it right now. And one of the questions the commission had was, you know, can we get an opinion from the building commissioner or structural engineers to whether or not the existing structure can support whatever addition is happening, or is it necessary to do something else, in which case maybe it makes sense to put up on pilings, so that work has to be done anyway. So I was expecting to be able to see if it's out of the hall, but
he was going to be here?
That's the conversation.
But you don't know whether he's got anything.
I didn't get the sense that he had it. He had some sort of an opinion from a structural engineer. Frankly, what I read in that report, I think it was the one sentence that dealt with this particular issue, it seemed to me that the structural engineer was saying, if I were the owner of this structure, I would raise it up on something entirely new, because being concerned about the stability of what's supported here right now. And I said, that sounds pretty clear to me that the existing structure is not capable of supporting those things. I think he was, trying to explain that it was raised up on piling per se, but again, I think if you look at the photographs, it's not really piling per se. It typically goes deep in the ground in one element as opposed to a pile of things. You know,
four by four on the
really block. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would take much for, if there were a few supports, you could probably just push the structure over.
Yes, the piling is not a pile of things.
Yeah. Maybe it's different
things.
Different definitions.
Thanks, Matt.
So anyway, I don't know if you want to continue now or just see if he shows up later tonight. He was expected to be here.
Well, we can always move on.
Yeah. Regardless of what we think about that, the thing is, he's filed a request for interpretation. I don't know if the request is really enough.
Yeah.
And would he be better served if we just dictated positive determination?
It might be easier just, if you're going to have that point after the discussion of anyway, it would be easier to just tell him.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because this,
right.
Otherwise it's just a
I think it's just confirming the commission's last determination that in light of this new information that we've now seen, it seems pretty clear that that we're there, and there's no reason to change the issue, and it's a positive determination.
Because it doesn't mean that you may not be able to proceed just as long,
but it's a no. I had thought when I called and said, take a look at the structure, you may find it's a little different than what you thought. I thought, okay, well maybe there's something we're not aware of. And I went under it and I took a look underneath these little panel doors that open up, these breakaway panels, and I found that it wasn't quite what I was expecting. So, okay, so I will pass on.
Motion.
Motion to issue a positive determination.
Second. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. All right. I hear a motion.
Motion to recess for public hearings.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. First item, Cynthia and John Palladino, 23 Phillips Drive. Notice of intent prior to enforcement order and restoration.
Thank you. record, I'm Tom Hughes with Hughes Environmental Consulting here on behalf of Cindy and John Calvino. Looking for after-the-fact approval for the work they did down by intermittent unnamed stream that flows by their house. We did a site visit back late spring, early summer on the site, and looked it over, and based on the enforcement order had been written on the site and talked about potential filling, BBW, etc. And I think we resolved earlier on that there was no filling of BBW. The work was all done in the buffer zone and adjacent to. And so what we've done, just to remind you of the work that we've done, is essentially the installation of this wooden wall along the edge of the driveway in an area where the old lawn had kind of sloped down. And in putting in the wall, I think it was two or three trees that were moved right adjacent to that. Then there was an area where there were a bunch of debris piles that were kind of at the end of the driveway. You can kind of see them in this photo. And then they kind of go down to an area, and it's probably better if I show you on the plan view, where there's an isolated wetland that's back in here that is essentially taking some water from points and some water from a couple perforated drains around that is taking water, I believe, from the foundation drain of the house and another that's sort of the back of this wooden wall that runs along the backyard. It's kind of flowing down this one area here. Then there's a hand-dug ditch that looks like it's been there for a while that just kind of drains that water away towards the stream. Another thing about this stream to note, and I mentioned it in the narrative, and I think the commission saw, that what has happened is the town has taken the runoff that seems to come down Phillips. There's a big hill there, and you can even see where it kind of comes, some of the runoff comes there, the water just percolates out of the pavement at times. And they basically directed it right across here, and you can see that kind of stone ditch here, and then it kind of comes down around the head wall and flows right directly into the stream without any kind of treatment. As I mentioned in the narrative, there were no signs of any kind of siltation or any kind of impact to the stream from the work that Palatinos did, but there are some signs of some sort of gravelly material that aren't consistent with the parent material in the area that look like they may have washed off the roadway into there. So it's just something for you to be aware of. What we're proposing to do, and we talked to the commission about this over the summer, is rather than removing the wall, we're proposing to plant along the stream side a minimum of 5 native shrubs and 3 native trees. And on the house side, we're proposing to plant a minimum of 8 native shrubs in that area along the wall. We're also proposing to basically get rid of the hand-dug ditch and expand the isolated wetland area to accommodate the water that's coming out of those perforated drains and plant this area with native shrubs. And there's a, basically in the narrative that I provided, there's a pick list of shrubs, and the wetland restoration area, we're proposing two saplings, 13 shrubs. I have to note, there's actually, it looks like there's an error on my planting area B narrative. I just noticed I've got 25 shrubs shown on the narrative, and it's actually shown on the plans correctly. They may do more than that, but if I could just note for the record that on page 3 or 4 of my narrative, the shrubs for planting area B should actually read 8, and the sapling should read 0. Planting area B is, I'm sorry, for A, should be 8 shrubs, and for B should be 2.
Okay, I got it.
3 and 5, planting area B. Okay, so 3 trees, 5 shrubs.
In B.
In B?
B. Right, that's the area down on the stream side.
And an A?
Planting area A should be as shown on plan, 8 native shrubs.
No trees.
Yeah, I mean, these are minimums, so if they choose to add additional, and the number is actually correct for the wetland restoration area that's shown on the table. So the idea is this is basically a stand of alders, and so what we would do is probably continue that with some additional alders and probably some high bush blueberry and maybe some winterberry back in there. But I've given them a pick list so they can choose things they like. They're all, you know, fat, wet, things that will do nicely back in there. And the idea is what that will do is it will take the water that's coming off the Foyts, the water coming from their property, and it will contain it within the isolated wetland. And then if that ever overflows, it sort of overflow into the stream rather than right now where it just basically drains into the stream through the hand-dug ditch. The hand-dug ditch does taper out before it reaches the stream. Water seems to infiltrate down rather than actually making it to the stream about 4 or 5 feet back. I don't know if you guys remember that feature, but I think overall it's a pretty good plan. We're talking about, you know, a pretty substantial expansion of that isolated wetland, increasing the natives on site, more than planting for the impacts that were, you know, that occurred on the site.
Did you ever figure out where that 4-inch PVC pipe came from?
No. But that's another thing we are proposing to cut that flush.
Okay.
With the stream dam, because if you remember, there's a PVC pipe that sticks out about 3 feet or so into the stream, just in the air. So we're going to cut that flush at the bank.
Do you have any questions?
And I'll update the narrative. I'll just fix that and provide an updated copy to Andy tomorrow.
Oh, sorry. Anybody from the public that's not from the state?
they can talk to
them. Just joking. Any questions from the public? Okay. Thanks.
Then I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And my apologies for that error on the team.
It's okay. Where did Andy go? Anybody see where Andy went?
Andy had a stone buzz the ground.
Okay. Before I call you guys up here, I will.
I would like to have him here.
In that case, now for the main attraction, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Mass Highway, DOT, Whittier Bridge, I-95, project.
Excuse me, can I just say that I'm on the list and you just asked me?
Yes, sir. We did, we looked at the pictures that Andy took, and we made a positive determination, which means it's, we consider it...
project.
Yeah, permittable project. So you would need to file a notice of intent for anywhere.
Right, which is with?
Which would be with us. You go through the permitting process. and file a notice of intent with the commission.
Right. I'm not sure what exactly that is.
The request for determination was to see if we felt that the Wildlife Protection Act applied, and we determined that it did, which now puts it into the notice of intent. If you decide to go forward with the work, you file a notice of intent with the with Andy or Julia. So, can I explain that well enough?
I can't see why it's part of the Wetlands Protection Act. The house, what we seem to be under two completely different themes last time I was here, I don't think you realise that the house is already on piles.
Well,
that's what it was built on.
The decision was that we didn't. It's really not on piles. It's on pieces of concrete and cinder blocks and wood and such.
We'd like to hear more formally how we want to fortify that. It looks like the work that you're planning to do is going to require fortification of what the house is.
I've got that in here.
But you do that through a more formal process.
Sent it to me, but on the Woody Bridge project, this is a cross section at the Merrimack Riverside. I apologize, I couldn't get a few earlier than this, but this helps illustrate what's happening there on the abutment side towards the river before and after. So as we'll go to our presentation.
Through the alignment past 495 up to just north of exit 60, which is the Salisbury 286 exit, which is about a half mile south of the New Hampshire border. This corridor has been improved over the years. In the 70s, it was upgraded to a 8-lane section, which as you approach the curve, tapered down in the section from here up through the interchange. Basically, was unimproved from the late 60s in terms of where it was The only thing that really changed is in the 70s, the bridge was rehabbed, and it was built out to allow six lanes of traffic, which actually utilized the breakdown lane that was there originally on the bridge. And also, that's the time when the walkway and the scenic overlook was deleted from the Newburyport Shore. 195 came in right around 1970, but the section right in this corridor has been unimproved since the 1960s, which is why it's three lanes. Some of the grand issues in Newburyport, and as we get up near Salisbury, don't meet today's code. In the 70s, the existing bridge would still have had sufficient life left in it, as well as the traffic numbers near term still supported it, but as it came time to replace the bridge, went through a process of reviewing it, determined we had to replace it, and have moved forward. That's part of the environmental assessment, the EA, EAR, which is public comment right now. One of the key elements that comes out of the project, of course, is the shared use path from the Rock and Ride over the bridge, getting it out to Allen Street, which allows a tie into the Ghost Trail and a potential connection to the Powwow Trail underneath the highway. So, you know, that is the project overall elements. This is the proposed bridge, which is a network arch, which replicates the existing. This graphic right here is a view of what we're still working on the preliminary design, a view of what the connection at the Park and Ride facility could look like, which is the shared use path. This is one of the terminuses up in the Old Narrow Road area, and the bridge itself has two overlooks. This represents one of the overlooks that would appear about the center of the river. Getting into the issues associated with Newburyport. As you can see, just a quick summary. The existing bridge, as it sits today, with the twin channels, with the High Rock Ridge, which is really an extension of Deer Island, which runs up the river. This shows you the completed bridge, two separate structures as opposed to the unified structure that exists today. I have a sequence of drawings which show the build-out in nine stages. This is the same view as we saw on the larger scale, showing the existing structure. We have a 300-foot right-of-way. The project goes to the edge of the eastern edge of the existing right-of-way to build a new northbound structure. Comes across a set of four piers in the water. There end up being three piers in the water as the two mid-channel piers get unified into a single pier. We continue to build. We make use of the High Rock area where it's not navigable with barges, create a platform to build the main span, which is the network arch. It gets built out. And when the bridge is ready to receive it, it gets swung around, jacked up, and a lowering tide sets it on the piers. Once the bridge is open, all traffic shifts over to it in the condition that it's in today, three lanes each direction. That allows us to demolish the existing bridge without any impact to traffic. It has to start in the middle of the arch and deconstruct it out to the piers. We get the bridge down. We build the same the southbound bridge in the same manner. Build off station with the network arch. We swing it around, place it on a lowering tide. We open southbound traffic in its final configuration with four lanes all the way through, and in a breakdown lane that allows us to reconfigure the existing northbound, move the temporary center barrier, push the traffic over. Place that barrier in the allowable extra bridge width to create a shared use path. We end up with four lanes northbound with a breakdown lane adjacent to the barrier, which separates the roadway from the shared use path. One of the issues I thought this graphic kind of helped show it. The close up of the existing bridge, looking at the shoreline, we'll get into the shoreline discussion and also. Sarah Allen from Norman Associates, after we go through the stormwater, we'll talk about the shading impacts on the Newburyport shore, the small zone of salt marsh we have down here, and the relocation of the outfall, which right now is on the eastern edge of the alignment, which will shift out of that zone. so you can see whatever scale going on. This represents the driver's perspective of northbound, adjacent to the shared use path. And this took a close-up of the shared use path, which initially is a travel lane. The barriers in the center of the bridge, it moves over, creates that shared use path, which is a 14-foot wide. And there's an overlook on each end of the network arch.
So those are the barriers used during construction to...
Basically, there's a concrete barrier which divides the north and south on the same bridge. That's temporary, gets removed. The design details, whether that is able to be reused in terms of how the design build team creates it, or whether that's a barrier, which is a temporary barrier, which they use in a bunch of other bridges and they actually construct the new barrier. It really depends on how they develop the... how creative they get, how they develop the detail. But the barrier itself, the existing barriers are 32 inches tall. The new standard is 42 inches. On the side, which is adjacent to where pedestrians are, there's actually, you know, you notice the steel rail on top. That gets to 54 inches, because you need 54 inch for pedestrian and bicycle areas on walkways. It's really just a bicycle issue, which gets up to 54.
How tall is the fence on top of that barrier next to the traffic?
That's a 2.5-foot fence on top of a 3.5-foot barrier, so it gets into 6 foot. That's basically it's a debris barrier. An actual aid different roadway items coming over into the shared use path area, but it's also open mesh to allow people on the shared use path not to feel isolated in like a tunnel effect, so they can still see traffic and traffic can see them. And it generally, throughout the country, it's seen as a safety issue. It makes people feel safer. As you can see, the two overlooks. And there's also an overlook of a similar type in what we call the abutment, the hard structure right in the Newburyport shore to allow other views. So, you know, that's an overview. I'd be happy to answer some general questions. If you're all set, we can get right into the stormwater. We'll follow up with the other issues. Great.
For the record, Steve Corvo, civil engineer, Tech Tech, consultant firm working for DOT, Moody Ridge Project. I have overall project locus with respect to the town of Newburyport, Route 113, Merrimack River, existing highway showing the gray hatching, the proposed relocated northbound road, we proposed to be a bridge and reconstruct the southern approach is shown in yellow. The orange line bisecting the screen showed the limits of the zone 2 associated with the public water supplies for the town of Newburyport. Green line just showing off the edge here is the zone A associated with Bartlett Spring Pond, and then it's a little difficult to see, but there's a zone B that extends in the approximately existing median for that same surface water. The project's primarily entirely located in the Merrimack River Basin, except for a small piece of the shared use path extension, which parallels 95 northbound and extends to the parking facility at exit 57. Which represents approximately a half-acre increase in pavement for the shared use path, offset through proposed treatment measures in this vicinity of water quality swale, 7-4 bay, and an infiltration basin for treatment prior to discharging stormwater back into the existing I-95 collection system. Brown line bisecting here is the bridge line of the highway and represents basically the divide from which wood flows to the Merrimack. The existing highway drainage collection system is basically closed for the entire section of highway, which also picks up a section of Pine Hill Road, which drains into the 95 collection system, flows through a median collection system, which eventually discharges on the southern bank of the Merrimack River with a 36-inch outfall. As part of the project, we're going to relocate that outfall and upsize it to 42 inches. And what I'll do is, just to give you a couple I'll show you a couple of 40-scale sheets. And the tiles shown in this plan represent the stormwater management plans for those in the area of the plan set.
So just to give you a little more of a snapshot of what's happening here. What's shown in orange is the existing drainage system associated with the highway. Blue is the proposed. Green is the grading. What's shown down here is the proposed infiltration basin on the Newburyport property, 7-4 bay, an infiltration basin with the proposed piping that would send the treated stormwater back to the new collection system, flowing south towards the river. And eventually, discharge of the new 42-inch outfall on the southern bank of the bridge. The outfall will be moved west relative to the existing in an effort to avoid the existing salt marsh, which is approximately bisected by the existing stormwater discharge from the 36-inch CMP. As an overview, there's approximately 5 acres of additional pavement in this vicinity of the project, including Whittier Bridge, the limits on the southern abutment. The proposed infiltration basin that we're showing east of the northbound roadway will provide treatment for approximately 10 acres of pavement to more than offset the discharges to the Merrimack River. And just to kind of touch on the stormwater management standards as it relates to the project now, DEP and DOT have worked in connection to put together a document, if anyone's familiar with the 2004 Mass Highway Stormwater Handbook for Highways and Bridges, which basically outlines a more of a macro approach for analysis on highways rather than an outlet-by-outlet basis. And what that relates to on this project is, in terms of water quality, the evaluation is conducted at the resource area, as an example, the Merrimack River, whereas the existing stormwater that discharges from the bridge direct scuppers and discharges upstream, as an example, a 36-inch culvert. The evaluation is conducted to the existing amount of pavement tributary to the resource area compared to the proposed, and the 80% TSS removal is provided for at least the incremental increase in pavement, although the proposal is to provide as much treatment as practical for the entire development and the redevelopment condition. To that effect, I think if there's any specific questions, I've got some more plans I can go through. I know there was a discussion on the cross-section that was forwarded. I'm not sure if everyone was able to see a copy of it, so I'll just show it briefly. What's shown here is 2 cross-sections. The bottom one is an existing section through the existing southern abutment of the Whittier Bridge, and what's shown on top is a section through the new Whittier Bridge with the proposed outfall shown here, the proposed southern abutment pulled further back, an access road for a relocated water main that would be provided for the town of Newburyport, 2-to-1 biostabilized slope, and the proposed head wall for the new outfall.
A couple of questions if I may have that, the cross section.
Yeah.
So the proposed outfall is just above the 100-year flood zone, or that?
Exactly. So The existing outfall, what we're showing is at elevation 10.5, with the that's the proposed outfall elevation. The existing outfall elevation is approximately 5.5.
And then on the 2-to-1 slope above the head wall, that's you say biotechnical stabilization. Is that riprap or is that some sort of a fabric?
If I can use Tim Dexter from DOT to talk a little bit about basically.
Yeah, so we're currently working with the landscape sections to figure out specifically what we're going to do at this location. So we have a mix of options, but in the spirit of restoring the Riverford area, it's mainly going to be plantings with a geotextile fabric. So we could use some sort of jute fabric. We haven't specified which species we're going to plant, but we're thinking shade-tolerant species that you commonly find within floodplain. Now, what we're likely going to have to do is a mix of hard and soft techniques. So underneath the surface of the proposed soil, we're probably going to have some sort of rock fill, a modified rock fill. So it's not going to be your traditional large riprap, but smaller rock to stabilize the slope. And then we may have 1 or 2 feet of a mix of soil and smaller cobbles on top of that. And then as you get closer to the surface, probably a couple inches of loam. And then we'll do plantings throughout, loam and seed, with a wildflower seed mix. And, you know, we just need to figure out the shrub plantings.
And is the intent that that detail will be submitted to the commission prior to its approval in, you know, sometime in January?
That's the goal. And I think we have enough time to get to that point. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, putting our heads together, figuring out what's going to be, you know, best at this location. Also, what you can't see with this particular cut for this cross section is there is going to be a retaining wall to support the water main access road. And instead of going with a traditional concrete retaining wall, we're proposing basically it's a gabion basket where you have rock and soil fill in a basket with plantings coming out the side of it. So it looks like a green retaining wall. And you can step them up. It's something that we've used successfully on other projects. So it'll look nice. It'll look nice and green. And so that's basically the plan. You know, we'll provide something to the commission that provides a little bit more detail. I think at the same time, because it's going to be design build, we don't want to specifically specify, you know, the earthwork stabilization that will be done below the surface. But we understand that it'll be a mix of hard stabilization, you know, below the surface with, you know, a more natural approach on top.
Is there what's maintenance type issues on the gabion wall and the jute, you know, whatever you're going to be doing, having some more detail coming along, but for that slope, I mean, is there a maintenance requirement for MassDOT, or is the anticipation that once that is, you know, stabilized with vegetation, there's not really any work that's needed?
What I've seen with similar ridge types where it's more of a valley span, where you have adequate space, you know, on the side slope beneath the bridge for vegetation to grow and you have enough light. You know, what I've seen is that maintenance-wise, if there are large trees that are coming up and extending into the superstructure itself, those are typically trimmed or cut. So that's why we're proposing shade-tolerant shrubs that aren't going to grow tall in here. Ideally, this area, this side slope, will be, you know, wild. You know, we won't maintain it. The goal is to have this be, you know, a wildlife corridor with, you know, with herbaceous vegetation and shrub growth. You know, again, if larger trees start, you know, threatening the superstructure, getting close to the superstructure, that will have to be trimmed, you know, or cut, you know, throughout time. But, you know, the scale that we're talking about is, you know, it's going to be a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to that point. In regards to the gabion basket, I'm not sure. In regards to maintenance, I can look into that for you, though. You know, I think it's something new that people are starting to use across the country. You know, specifically for MassDOT, we've only used it on a handful of projects that were recently constructed in the past few years. So, you know, I don't think we've had, you know, maintenance experience with those structures yet. You know, over time, will they need to be trimmed or cut? You know, quite possibly. The ones that I've seen basically look like, you know, you have these, it's flat on top, flat on the side, it's just grass sticking out of the side. You know, it looks pretty neat.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the metal, whether that, you know, is there a lifespan of that that would be shorter than the bridge, you know, and sort of before someone's really looking at substantial work out there, does it need to replace that?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I think we can look into it, you know. Typically, when we use gabion baskets, it's just rock fill baskets,
right.
You know. So this is a more green take on that, where you, you know, fill the soil, wrap it in a biodegradable fabric, mm-hmm. and you know, seed the inside, the soil on the inside, and you stick plantings out of the side of it.
Yeah, more habitat. Yeah.
And so, if I can just add to that, we use them on non-highway related sites, and they basically become self-stabilizing. You put the roots in them, and if you use willow or if you use some other similar woody material, the roots sort of take over where the wire corrodes, you know, or something.
Yeah.
But the roots are established and replaced.
Okay. They last long enough to allow that to happen on its own. And then,
right,
yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Just one question. Water that the rain falls on the bridge and melting snow, is that water flow off the bridge into the treatment or into the collection facility, or does it drop down?
It would drop down to the Merrimack. That's That's consistent with the existing drainage on the existing Deer Bridge. There's, if anyone's been under the bridge, you can see the pipes sticking down below. So the proposal is to provide scuppers on the new bridge for all the drainage, except that they would be routed down around the piers instead of Mike wants to
suggest. Yeah, and the scupper flow would be collected, and it would basically be headers and leaders, which would actually bring it down adjacent to the piers. So each scupper would individually, just drop into the river, but then we collect their system and then pipe it down.
Could you go one drawing back so we can look at the treatment?
Sure.
I'm wondering, where is that treatment located?
This is northbound, southbound, north. Merrimack River is just off the screen.
What plate is that on?
Again, just kind of a little project overview. So this, what we're looking at is I-10.
10?
Yep.
Right, so here. It's on the New Freeport Water Department land?
It's on
sheet
7
negotiation, the sheet 7 New Freeport.
So sheet's...
Sheet 7?
Yeah, sheet 7. I think one of the questions that I brought up a little earlier was presumably there's some time frame for getting the Water Commission, and does the city actually need to allow that work to take place? And there's some detail coming along as far as the exact meets and bounds, even though there's a dotted line here showing the approximate line of work.
Yep.
There's some sort of definitive meets and bounds coming from the city for us to take a look at. I don't know what your time frame would be with that, but clearly we need to get something before the Water Commission, before the mayor, to deal with as an approval. So aside from the stormwater side of it, which our city engineer is looking at, and the CONCOM jurisdiction on it, so I don't know if either of you know time frame for that, getting a formal request to the city to use that area.
We're going to go through the right-of-way department, the right-of-way plans will be coming
in
the end of the
year. Second week in January.
Yep. The plans are coming in at the end of January. The state will get a second review of them. We did a preliminary review of 2 weeks ago, and things were looking good. So those plans come in, the state will be satisfied, and that right-of-way process will start with any entities which require some level of access, whether it's construction period or a permanent easement like this. So that'll be mid-January in the state.
So the lease goes on until they're approved internally,
so
accepted internally, which is probably going to take like probably 30 days. So you're probably looking at the middle of February by the time we actually have...
That's true.
And so effectively, given the time frame that you've outlined, which maybe it's worth mentioning in the commission as a whole, but it looks like you're looking for the approval from the commission, but then after that, we would have that discussion with the Water Commission.
Sure. If we could get conditional approval, conditional on the right way being finalized and approved by the commission, that'd be great, just so at least we know where we're headed with it. Do you need us to request that? Is that something you would request from them?
We need some formal request. We've already initially had discussions with them, and just so the commission is aware, the Water Commission is aware of it, they've talked about it, the engineer is aware of it, and they're looking at it. They don't expect to have any issues with it. They're looking over the little details right now, but they are aware of it. It's not a surprise in any way. By just going in terms of timing, it looks like it's something that will happen after the approval is required. The approval from the commission, which is early February.
So if we have to, we'll draft something up that we'll do it to your office,
sure.
And we can even have maybe a draft, we can label a draft conceptual plan, which shows the area. We'll do that.
And that is where the water is being treated in part and then sent back into the collection system towards the river.
Exactly. So the blue shows the proposed piping going in and then proposed piping going back out, just north of that point.
Where you're going to be constructing that detention basin, what is there right now?
Primarily, what is it?
It's all uplands.
Yeah, it's uplands.
It's uplands. I think actually...
Is that a river craft, yeah.
Is there some river there?
Yeah,
yeah.
River craft runs almost all the way up to the abutment. Actually, it does run up to the abutment.
Are we talking for the basin?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the bridge.
That area, I think if you look at some of the plans, it's actually from the history of the site, it's the old sand filter bed area. And I think that basically it covers a lot of that area that had been partially leveled with the water department's use 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, the one question I had was there's a spring down here, right around here somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's not I'm just wondering why that wasn't listed in the wetlands delineation.
Do we propose any work within 200 feet of it?
It's probably outside the right of
way. It is outside the right of way.
Yes.
Right of way line. It's tough to see, but the right of way line is.
It comes out of that kind of ravine, which is. It's right down
here somewhere. Because this is the old concrete wall.
Right.
It's right around here somewhere.
It comes out of here and it runs down. It's actually that place when you walk in here. There's like a little log, some informal log bridges down there to cross over.
There was a place on the highway at which the water changed direction of flow. Where was that in relation to the sheet?
Well, this is the crest curve in the highway.
Yeah.
It's a bridge line. Everything from this point flows south, which the scope of work from within this sub-watershed, basically just the additional series path parallel to the northbound road. And then from the high point, everything flows south. It's closed drainage existing, closed drainage proposed, except that the proposed shared use path, which is would drain towards a water quality scope on the east side of that. There is another low point in the highway, approximately right here, at which point grade starts transitioning back up to the high point in the middle of the bridge.
Mm-hmm. So the treatment, just point to it on that drawing.
Right here.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
So basically, everything from the high point down, including stormwater that hits the 95 collection system relative to the local road, to a point here, gets diverted to the basin, and then the stormwater that's treated to the 85% TSS removal gets sent back into the collection system and is essentially commingled with everything south of that point, which is the treatment practice for that. Everything on land would be deep sub catch bases and then collected back to the collector pipe and sent to the new 42-inch outfall.
I know our city engineer is still looking at the plan for the water side of it, as is FST. One of the questions we had initially that's come up is, what, if any, benefit or approval will there be if there's a truck spill on the approach to the bridge, on the bridge, on that section of the highway, you know, compared to what's happened historically out there? Is there any improvement to that situation as it's being collected, treated, and bring to Merrimack?
To the extent that a spill happens between the high point and the point where the collection system diverts, it would be captured upstream of the basin and empty out at that point. To the extent that the spill happens north of the basin or even on the bridge, it's exceeding the point of containment of the stormwater treatment area. Within the approach, it would still be within the proposed collection system. So there would be some catch, with deep sub catch bases, you collect some from that.
Okay. So, effectively, all of before, if it's on that high point up to, let's say, Prairie Road area where it's going to the detention area, that water will eventually end up in the basin before going in to be treated in part before going into the Merrimack.
Exactly. Everything, basically,
none of that water flows directly over that.
It does now, so existing conditions, that's the case.
Yeah. One of the questions that would come up, and it's maybe not entirely for the commission, but it will come up, is the question is, what liability does the city have when or if that something like that happens, given that it could be a spill coming from the highway, ends up on city property, but it's a drainage area for the highway itself. Just on
my experience is working dealing with the MCP.
Yeah.
It's clearly the responsibility of the truck operator.
Yeah.
If we were going wrong, is that company would be responsible for hiring the OSP and following through it. The whole MCP phase 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
This year will come up as a.
They're responsible
financially, but the state comes up with their own response team to take care of it.
Oh, right, yeah.
emergency response.
And all I'm saying is that probably what the city's going to want, which is probably what you're leading, is from a legal background, is just the city's probably going to want some sort of sentence, you know, or paragraph on identification that, you know, clearly whatever happens there, whether it's between Mass Highway or the operator or whoever else, the city is not going to be cleaning up on that property, given that that's full, if it happens, because of the highway. That's probably what the city would be looking for as we get to that point. But ideally, we'd be able to collect everything. We recognize that you're not going to collect everything before it reaches the Merrimack. You don't do that right now. It's not, you know, it's not going to change everything that drastically, but hopefully we'll collect it better. And that's more of our question tonight. Is it any better what we collected? But also legally, I think the city wants to make sure that I expect that to be an issue in the next couple of weeks as you hear back from the engineer and the water commission. It's just that there's confirmation that it's clear that the city is not going to be directly doing that.
We don't do the water part. I'm going to go on to something else, which I'm not sure your presentation's over yet, but it is.
No, it's open questions.
It's just open questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Your erosion sedimentation control plan for the construction phase.
Yep.
I'm wondering how that looks for the.
Stormwater pollution prevention.
Yeah.
What we're pursuing with this is that we're looking for an order of conditions contingent on submittal of a stormwater pollution prevention plan by the DD and PLA date. There is a provision within the stormwater management standards for highly complex projects that will allow that. That's what we're asked for.
For us to create a plan when they have a whole different sequence of work, the commission require them to come in again.
Yeah.
And so we just tie the performance standard and make them come in and present their own plan.
Okay, good, thank you.
Anything else?
We had some information on the shading.
Okay.
Just as you're going up that, based on the filing right now, there's no well replication in here, whereas the other communities there's storages like that. In our case, there's no need for that.
That's correct. It's actually
Ainsborough. I'm sorry.
I'm Sarah Allen. I'm with Norman Dove Associates. I'm invested in the natural resource consulting for the Weaver project. And I'm open to any questions. I just heard kind of through the grapevine that you had some questions about shading. So if there's something specific that you'd like to hear, we can talk about that, or I can sort of walk through the general analysis and then we can talk.
Why don't you walk through it first, Sarah?
Right.
And just in terms of, you know, basically how we put it together, what the basis is, and then the series of slides you went, basically, you know, you describe how you created the model.
What we did was try to understand exactly what the shading impacts of the bridge were going to be. And to do that, to be honest, there's not much literature out there. The first thing you typically do is go into the literature to see what other analyses have done. And there's just not much out there. There were a few studies that gave us some numbers, but they weren't directly applicable to this bridge. So if you look in the report, in the appendix, there is some reference to literature for whatever it's worth. I think the site-specific studies tell you a whole lot more about what's going on for this bridge. So we took it from two approaches. One was to model it and to try to understand exactly how sunlight was coming in, the configuration of the bridge. And the other was to look at existing conditions under the bridge now to understand what those impacts that are measurable. We know what the height is, we know what the spacing of the bridge is, we know the vegetation underneath it, and try to put a relationship between the amount of shade under the bridge and the effect on vegetation. So that's what this figure represents, and that's in the NOI as well. This is, I hope you can all see it, but here's the existing bridge kind of running right across here. Underneath the bridge, and this is on the Amesbury side because there's really not much vegetation to assess currently under the Newburyport side. On the Amesbury side, there is BBW, which is this section right in here, And then there's a band of salt marsh that runs along the shelf on the other side. if you look at all this vegetation, you can go out there and see that there is a stand of phragmites, which is right here. There's a stand of cattail, which is coming along here. And then underneath the bridge, there is a set of different vegetation. And then coming along the shore, there's some additional salt marsh species. So what we did was go under and look at the effects of what we considered the bridge impacts. And the bridge impacts include not only shading, but it also includes drought as well, because there's no precipitation. This is a 95-foot wide bridge currently, and there's basically no precipitation falling underneath it. So in the upland, for instance, you see very little vegetation here, because partly due to shade, but partly due to drought, and partly due to kind of disturbed substrates that are underneath there. In the wetland, drought is less of an issue because you've got flooding coming up from the river periodically. In the wetland, however, you do have some fill substrates that are very coarse and not your typical salt marsh substrates. So it's very complex under there, is what I'm trying to say. We looked at vegetation, and we compared it to what we saw outside, you know, kind of away from the effects of the bridge, and made some kind of general characterizations. We created categories saying that areas that showed no change in vegetation, either in structure, the height of vegetation, or in the species composition, that's no impact. Minor impacts are either a slight change, we said 50% change in species composition or structure. Moderate impacts are changes in, I'm sorry, less than 50%. Moderate impacts are changes in species composition and structure. And then severe impacts are essentially no vegetation, very stunted vegetation. And if you go into there now, there are no severe impacts. This area in green is what we determine to be moderate impacts just because of changes in species composition and in density. And then this area in light green are minor impacts, where essentially these beds of cattail, for instance, become sparse and the height actually increases because the vegetation is trying to grow towards the light. So we were able to kind of sketch out how we saw vegetation laying. And one thing I want you to notice is that it's not bands that correlate directly with the configuration of the bridge. They sort of jog over like this. And that's, I think, that's a result of the angle of the sun coming in and the slope of the bank. This is due north. So the bridge is angled in kind of a northeast-southwest configuration, which means that the sun, which is coming over here, is basically shining more from the eastern side, hence you're getting kind of a sunnier effect, which would, if it was beaming straight down onto the bridge, this entire swath would be moderate impacts, and this entire swath would be minor impacts. However, because of the angle of the sun, you get a little bit more sun coming in here. And I'm only pointing that out. I'm sorry?
It will be exactly the opposite, though, on the inverse side.
It will be on the... Well, it won't be the exact opposite. The effect's less because you've got... You still, the bridge is still coming at the same angle, but you have a slope there that blocks the early sun.
And the bridge itself is kind of...
Right, so on the west side, you're right, you have a natural shade barrier on the west side because of the slope. The next step after understanding what the vegetation was there was to compare it to what we saw for shading based on our model. And I'm not going to walk you through the entire modeling system, but what we did to create these maps, and these are the ones that are in the NOI, these figures are a result of kind of snapshots of shading effects in the course of 6 days. We picked 6 days between April and September. So once a month, we pick the 21st, the solstice, and then back when we pick June 21st as the solstice, and looked at the 21st of April through September, with the idea that for each day, we would look at a 12-hour period, which is basically when the sun is at a predictable point, and analyze it. So we started at 6 a.m. and went to 6 p.m. and determined kind of the distribution of the shading pattern, hourly increments. So it's difficult to see, but this is the 6 a.m. shadow. This is the 6 p.m. shadow. So what you're seeing is the sun as it passes over, shifting shade coming in from this direction until it's over in this direction. And what you can do in the middle here is sum up shade as it overlaps. So for each hourly increment, you can draw a rectangle, for simplicity's sake, and where the rectangles overlap, if two rectangles overlap, you have 2 hours of shade. In the center here, you'll have multiple hours of shade because you've got the overlap. We simplified that just to spare you a little bit of the difficulty of interpreting it and put it into general categories again. So the light gray is 1 to 3 hours of shade. The medium gray is 4 to 5 hours of shade. And the darker gray is 6 to 7 hours of shade. And I'm using this one as an example because this is June 21st for the existing bridge. The area in red is the existing bridge. And you can actually relate it to this area of shade, which corresponds to this little window area on the existing bridge. And if you look at it, what you can see is that the darkest gray is running kind of straight up the western side of the existing bridge and corresponds actually pretty well. It's off a little bit, but corresponds pretty well with the area of moderate shade. So what we were able to do is say that that area of moderate shade is the result of 6 to 7 hours of shade from the bridge. And we call that a moderate impact. So it translates to 6 to 7 hours of shade, moderate impact. 4 to 5 hours of shade, minor impact. Less than 4 hours of shade, there's virtually no impact, because by the time you're out here, you're just not seeing impact.
What are the black stripes?
The stripe. these are snapshots in time. So this gap here is the difference between 5 o'clock in the afternoon and 6 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's not a continuous channel. It's
moved so fast that in that time period that there's no overlap in that snapshot.
Once we felt pretty good with ground conditions being verified by this model, we took it and applied it to the new bridge configuration. And looked at results over time as well. This is the June 21st configuration. The September 21st configuration. And what you can see is that in the June 21st configuration, you see areas of moderate shade that are sort of centered underneath the bridge but inside a little bit. You've got minor shade kind of running in a band down the center, on either side of the bridge, and then in the center of the bridge where there's a gap, you continue to have moderate shade. And this is basically the result that the gap itself is very important in this bridge, simply because at noontime, when the entire bridge is, if it was a solid bridge, would be in shade, the gap is 42 feet wide, it's kind of half the width of the bridge. 46 feet wide, I'm sorry. And it's providing a cone of sunlight coming down. So that's high-quality sunlight, which is it's sort of the maximum insulation, if you think about it, from per square foot of sunlight. And that turns out to be very important when it's, if that gap was not there, you'd be seeing some very deep shade underneath the bridge. But because the gap is there, it's letting light in, high quality light in at a critical time. And by the time you're out to the September 21st period, you're seeing only minor impacts from shade. There are no moderate impacts on the bridge. And again, that's because the angle of the sun has fallen so low in the sky that for periods of time, the sun is almost slanting directly under the bridge. So that's the analysis. You're welcome to ask questions, and if they're anything specific to the project, by all means.
Ask questions.
I know you do.
The Shaving study itself really didn't study the New Report side because the state...
Because it's not vegetated.
Not vegetated.
Not vegetated.
And yet there's 2,500 square feet of salt marsh that's affected, according to the data in the
That is this, in yellow, is salt marsh vegetation. Mm-hmm. This patch right here, which is just caught by the corner of the existing bridge. Under the new configuration, it will be partly directly under the gap and then partly under the northbound lane. And then there's another piece of salt marsh right here in yellow, which is the tip of it is also caught by the northbound lane. So that's where the 2,500 square feet is coming from.
Well, I guess my question is, on one hand you're saying there's no vegetation to be affected by the shading.
Oh, no, maybe I'm not being clear. For us to do this analysis, we needed a well-vegetated existing site. And on the new report side, you just don't have that. You only have that one little patch of salt marsh. So, on the new report side, it's really confounded by other issues such as... there appears to be, I wasn't part of the current study, but there appears to be a lot of scour and deposition that occurs. That's a very active area. And the only vegetation, this little salt marsh patch here, is deep, low marsh. It's flooded, probably at least 50% of the time. So it's not the high marsh, it's not... the immersed vegetation that we would typically be looking for. And that's, again, in part due to shading to the bridge, no doubt, but also I think it's more substantially related to this tower that's occurred there.
Okay. So it's Bartender ultimate floor that's there, I believe.
Right now it's Bartender ultimate floor.
Okay. And
well, the other issue in that area is right where it's completed the most is with the current 36-inch outfall discharges.
Yep.
Right across that area.
Yep,
and that's
another source of
the relocation to the north. That action that's in there right now from the outfall won't be there. And when we look at that area with the better sun and not having the fresh water flowing through it, and whatever debris comes down with it, it should actually start to flourish.
We've also proposed putting some boulders sort of directly in front of this area to offer some protection. If you go out there now, it's kind of interesting. You'll see the boulders that are in the river kind of over here all offer enough protection that you'll see salt marsh vegetation sort of clumped behind the boulders, which to me indicates that river scour is controlling or limiting salt marsh development over there.
So where the outfall is being moved to, is there any salt marsh that would be in the path of that outflow?
No. On this figure, the new outfall goes kind of right here, just to the west of the existing patch of salt marsh. And with that thought in mind, that Mike is right that this gap here is a result of the scour coming down from that outfall now. Mm-hmm. So if you move it over here, configuration of that outfall is going to disperse water, so you won't have that carving scour effect from the outfall as severely, and it will be flowing directly into places unvegetated now and will probably remain that way.
But that gap that is caused by the scouring right now will also now be directly under the North Mountain Ridge, right? So
it will be.
It will be much more shading effect than it has been in the past.
That's correct. But I think you'll still see vegetation from down there.
I guess what I'd like to see is some help on that vegetation and actually planting some there as opposed to waiting to see what nature does.
We could consider that. My experience has been that, especially if you have two colonies right next door, it built in very quickly. I shouldn't say very quickly, that it has the potential to fill in, especially if we give it some protection from currents.
Okay. I guess given the fact that we've gone from 240 square feet of salt marsh being affected by shade to 2,500 square feet of salt marsh being affected by the shade under three different degrees of moderation, I think it's unreasonable to ask for some
mitigation. The piece you have to keep in mind, too, is that 2,500 square feet are predominantly minor impacts. So none of them are severe.
20 square feet are severe.
Well, that's true. That's true. Very tiny amount.
And the other thing that I think the data as to whether it's minor, moderate, or severe is related to the width ratio of the bridge, which I didn't see calculated.
No, the minor, moderate numbers are our qualitative assessment based on that relationship between the existing conditions over here.
Okay, but the shading study itself refers to height to width ratios.
It does.
The effect that they have, and yet we don't have a height to width calculation.
I actually did attempt to do that for the for the proposed bridge, but because of the gap, the height to width ratio doesn't work. You have to take the gap into effect, and if you have height to width ratio of the two individual bridges, it doesn't work because it underestimates the amount of shade. If you combine them, it's a severe overestimate of the amount of shade. So I sort of gave up on that.
Apples to oranges, essentially. Not as equally comparable because they've done different metrics along the way. Trying to compare one bridge to two bridges that the gap is not really equivalent.
Right. If you look at the height to width ratio of the existing bridge, it actually did fall out pretty evenly with the studies that said, I'm not remembering what the configuration is, but the ratio of the existing bridge did fall into the little to no impact based on the ratios that are in the literature. And that matches what you see in the field.
The other question I had is two references.
Yeah.
There's no reference to what scientific journal they're in.
The references are in there?
Well, they just give a name and a date.
Yeah.
There's no reference to
where
they actually are. And there's no bibliography.
Then that's an omission on our part, because we can definitely get that to you.
I'd like to get a copy of those two studies.
Sure. There's not. My apologies. We'll get this to you.
Okay. If I could get it before the next meeting, so I could review it.
I can send you a PDF of
them.
I'll send
them
to
Annie.
I'll send them to Annie.
Yeah, if anybody's had anything sent to me, I'll distribute it right to the convention members. I don't have to worry about sending it to multiple people.
Okay.
So is the outfall, it appears to be aimed at part of the salt marsh. Is there going to be much in the line of an effect on that salt marsh?
It's actually not aimed at the salt marsh. It's just to the west of the salt marsh. And it's placed there to actually avoid impacts to existing cell porch.
Well, it seems like, at least from the overhead view, what I'll call the nozzle of the outfall, the eastern side of that clips part of the salt marsh.
Steve can probably speak to this better, but I don't think a nozzle is quite the right.
Okay, no, I just.
I think it's.
Right,
I
but.
Think it's, I think it's actually cut so it will. These are the side slopes to control flow from going out that way. So
okay.
It's actually going to maintain flow going down the middle. Is that correct?
You can probably
put it in better terms.
It's tough to, so I don't know if you can see the limits of the salt marsh are basically shown right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on the east side of the North Road. It's, what we're showing here is a head wall with some wing walls extended out. It's actually, you can see the contours about 10 or 15 feet high, but this would be a level spreader such that the pipe discharges right here and dissipates the spread to the Merrimack, approximately 40 foot miles right there.
Wait, that was the concentrated discharge, right?
Yeah,
right now exactly. It's just actually it's wrapped around the pipe, it's collapsing.
Right.
And it's just the direct pipe.
Oh, I know. I'm quite familiar with that area.
So there's not a lot of peak flow control at all.
Where's the limit of the soft marsh line?
The black line, so I'll just kind of walk around on my thumb.
I can't see your hands in there.
It's this is a salt marsh.
I guess Joe's concern is that it is, I assume the water's coming down the center of that.
Yeah, my concern is water going to flow off of here? It's aimed like, it appears to be aimed like this. So if it came straight off at whatever angle this is, it's going to clip the western tip of that salt marsh. That's
it. It's actually not going to be spread all the way across it. Aren't there wing walls that will?
Well, the wing walls, it for the most part, it'll be a level spread across that mouth. It's located right now in a manner to avoid the salt marsh. I mean, I don't know that it sounds like where it might be going to move from the west.
Well, it just seems. You know, if you have something that opens like this, water's going to flow out like that from it. That's whether that's how it's actually designed or not, I don't know, but if it's opening like this, I would think it's just going to spread from there.
Somewhat. I mean, the flow path would be perpendicular to the lines, you know, it's parallel to what's shown as the southbound road there. So I guess, you know, One might speculate as to whether or not it could catch that tip of it. It's tough to say.
Mm-hmm.
Can it all be moved any further west?
We can take a look, closer look at moving it a couple feet west. If you can tell by the contour lines, basically what we're trying to do is grade out that hill right there. Thinking about it.
Probably less of a spread on this end.
Yeah, or maybe it's totally. It seems like we're talking about a taller wall on that bank to tuck it over.
Yeah.
Or could you just shorten it here?
It's possible. I mean, what's shown on plan view is you know, a conservative design for the size of the pad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just think of a couple of things. You could decrease the size of the preference would be not to do that. And to just in terms of, you can see the difference in size of that relative to the, you know, the existing outfall is. For those who've seen it, it's basically, you know, might be like a 5 foot wide scouring of the pipe.
Right, but I'm just saying it's awful close to that salt marsh, and, you know, is it going to cause any damage to it if it's all coming out?
Yeah, well, I think they should just note it as a concern of ours.
Mm-hmm.
See, I assume you'll be back.
Yeah.
it's the size is designed to prevent scouring.
Yeah.
Engineering components, so something to really look at. One question I had, Tim was with regard to the plantings, the salt marsh plantings. And Sarah, you had alluded to that impacts the salt marsh mostly appear to be related to scour in that area. Did we replace the boulders? Would plantings be something that you think would do pretty readily within that boulder area?
This is the boulder sill that's indicated on the plan you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, it's something that we've done in the past where you basically have a boulder sill.
Usually it naturally, the sill forms behind the boulder naturally, and the salt marsh just sort of would meet in the middle, I guess. So,
yeah,
planting to be beneficial there, or would that sort of be wasted?
The way that we had designed it as such was just placing the boulder sill, knowing full well that we're going to have a lot of sediment coming off that hill. It's going to accumulate quite quickly. And because the salt marsh look fairly nice on either side, that you just have creep from those adjacent patches and come in.
So right now there'd be nothing to plant them in.
If you look at it now, you can see kind of a remnant peat from the original salt marsh that was there. It's been chewed away on it's been chewed away kind of on either side and is receding now.
Yeah.
And our thought was that if you protected it from not only from the scour coming from the outfall, but the scour coming from the river as well, you would start seeing the accrual.
Because right now that peat layer, it's about three feet thick. So I'm just wondering what would we plant, what would we use as substrate for the plantings?
You wouldn't need to. Theoretically, Spartina alterniflora would grow just in direct sand and plant it in a very coarse substrate, and it would take. So if that's something we should look at, we can certainly do that.
It would make you feel better.
Well, that's important.
It wouldn't run you over budget, but.
we don't want a big dig.
Tara, did you have reservations about proposing plantings and restoration?
To be honest, I plant less and less in restoration sites. I find that plantings, salt marshes are a little bit more amenable to plantings, but a lot of areas you put plants in and they kind of hang on. Nothing really takes off until either seed stock or rhizomes coming from more aggressive, more better suited plant material.
Now, wasn't there a bunch of, aren't a lot of those salt marsh plants, haven't they been replanted recently?
Yeah,
since the still.
Yeah.
Over in here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just down from the existing outfall, just that patch of salt.
So this that little isolated patch is a planted patch?
No, well, it just was enhanced.
Yeah.
It was enhanced.
Right.
Oh, because they didn't do too well, did they?
It was scoured with gasoline.
yeah, I noticed.
You don't love petroleum.
Yeah.
But we do have some experience further downstream under Jefferson Court, where we asked them to put some Spartina in the area. It took very well. It's an area that gets a fair amount of scour.
One other thing I haven't talked about, and are the sort of mitigating issues of the new bridge. We talked about the gap, which is probably the biggest one. But what's also significant for light is the indirect effect of light. And direct sunlight is all well and good, but indirect light that's kind of bouncing around in there is also very valuable. And on these bridges, because they're pulling the abutments back 50 feet, that's actually going to open up quite a bit of light source. I just blanked on the other issue. Oh, the piers are also smaller. So the piers right now are almost walls in front of the marsh, and that affects the Amesbury Port, the Amesbury side more than the Newbury Port side. But even on the Newbury Port side, when the sun is kind of over here on the western side, you'll certainly get more sunlight coming through because of the reduced size of the piers. So those two things will also
There's less, it mimics the style, but they're not as high, and there's less mass than the. The rendering is basically shown at high water, and today the piers and the massive wall comes all the way up, and basically the bearings sit on it. We're actually coming up to 2 foot above extreme high with basically that with the shape that's out there today, and then we transition to piers, which come up with more of a modern style and a pier cap. So there's actually openings. When you're looking down this area, there's opening. So besides the abutment being pulled back, the faces, although it doesn't affect the new report size, it's affecting the Amesbury side. But you know, we have more light showing and coming through.
In the afternoon, it will have an effect. The one other piece that we did not include in our analysis is the lattice part of the superstructure. We considered that to be fully open, so we estimated the height of the bridge on the existing bridge is coming all the way up to the solid portion of the bridge, where in actuality, you know, the lattice structure under there definitely reduces light. So you combine all of those, and I think our model is actually quite conservative in terms of estimating total light availability to plan some of the bridges.
The only question I have is about invertebrates that may be living in the water under the bridge.
Oh, you can write these papers and stuff.
Because I don't know what's there now. It's not mentioned in the study. What's there, I don't really have any knowledge of what's there and what might be the effect of the shape.
That's a reasonable question. I guess I can't answer. We didn't do any benefit studies under there, so I don't know what's in the marsh now and how that will affect the marsh. What I can say is that because we'll be improving substrates by putting in boulders for protection, we'll provide substrates that are better for the invertebrates. You know, beyond that, we didn't do those studies to be able to say exactly where it is. But one of the studies that I'll send out to you talks about invertebrates and changes, and they correlate moderately well with response to plants. So it's plants decline, invertebrates change and reduce.
And the boulders that will be put in will be large enough so that the ice in the time won't be moving around.
Well, I'm not the engineer, but that would certainly be the idea. would be big enough to stay.
The idea is to match the conditions that we have up there so they stay in place.
Okay. Have we anything else?
Should one question, if I could. Jump back real quick to the stormwater and just a quick summary. As the commission members are looking over this between now and the next meeting and the feedback to the stormwater reviews, what sort of operation and maintenance work is happening on the drainage system over the course of its life, most of the stormwater, different components of the detention area, you know, the catch basins and so forth, and what was some kind of today?
Yep.
Strips, that sort of thing.
I'm going to comment on that. Operation and maintenance of the proposed stormwater structure and the existing structures is undertaken by MassDOT District 4 offices. These structures are going to be inspected annually and then cleaned on an as-needed basis. So it'll be a stylized operation and maintenance. We'll get out there and see them yearly and clean them as needed.
Is the essential thing typically with a lot of projects, site plans, for instance, in the community or a specific parcel of land, the commission would want a copy of the O&M report, you know, provided on a yearly basis or in some cases several times a year, depending on what the work is being done,
yep.
Documenting the quality of that inspection and maintenance of it.
As far as the proposed stormwater components for the system, the same as what statewide, district-wide, so they're the same features that they're maintaining across the miles and miles of highway. DOT does maintain logs with EPA in accordance with operation maintenance systems. Some of that documentation, I'm not sure if we can make available, but we report on it.
There's nothing unique here in terms of but basically we have the basins, whether the detention or the infiltration basins, depending on where they're located, the deep sumps for the basins, that just falls within the standard O&Ms that the state follows on a district-wide basis.
The design proposed by Steve at the meeting tonight is the state of the art, very effective, but it's also should be. The ease of maintenance is also a big part of it. I'm sure you see them in this room before you. They're fitting them with some pretty fancy structures. And
underground filtration systems and all that.
Right. Which sounds great, but if they clog, they're useless. So what we have proposed is something that's easily inspected, easily maintained, but still just as effective as anything else you could.
Would you have a problem with something in the order of conditions that said, in accordance with district protocols, that you at least an annual inspection and cleaning as needed?
No, that's consistent with our statewide stormwater management plan. So that would definitely be appropriate. We can make both the stormwater management plan available.
We don't need to review a 200-page O&M district protocol or whatever that is.
Right.
But if the guts of it really amount to annual inspections and cleaning as needed, then
they can actually amount to cleaning more than once a year if conditions dictate. But that's the standard rule of thumb when it comes to highway maintenance.
Yeah, we think at the municipal level when we're approving plans, whether it be the planning board or the conservation commission, we're approving a very short O&M plan for a specific site as a list of the different features that are there, what work it does, whatever that work is.
Yeah.
In this case, maybe a quick summary that the commission is appropriate to say at a minimum these things are done once a year. That would be probably the most efficient way for us to do without going to 200 pages of something else. So I don't know if you want to kind of boil down from this, maybe a 100-page listing of the elements and the nature of the work that's done on a yearly basis. That way, we can incorporate in a specific condition what we expect to be done. So there's no confusion over that. It's consistent with your protocols anyway.
So long as it's consistent with our
exactly.
Operations,
exactly.
It's not more restrictive.
Right, that's what I suggest.
No, we're not looking back.
Yeah.
We own an officer reference of thousands of drainage structures, at least 5,500 outfalls and over 88,000 catch basins. So in terms of...
You don't want to comment on the 36-inch outfall. No.
I mean, a site-specific plan is definitely pushing the office, but I can assure you...
You want to keep it consistent, just for consistency with the way that we typically are approving a project, we're also approving
that's
the
appropriate.
That project. So,
we'd be happy to provide that.
The only other question, someone that asked a question about wildlife and the eagles, and we actually had a coordination. We just got a letter back today.
That's an actual letter.
I'm trying to read my BlackBerry.
Sarah's letter from Mass National Heritage from they're commenting on the yellow.
Yeah, she basically said there'll be no take endangered species. So that's the two certain species in the volume. I'll provide you with that later.
Okay.
We've completed our coordination with National Marine Fisheries on the Central Fish Habitat and Division of Marine Fisheries, no time to year restrictions. They love the open public during that time.
Yep.
And they have all their documentation still in there as well. So.
You also, checking in today, I didn't see a DP number yet for this. Did you?
Yes, I thought Alex said she saw the DP number.
We were in 8th grade last week.
I think my guess would be, but I didn't do that.
We had a number generated when we filed.
Okay.
I think they didn't offer comment, just offered a...
Probably already set the prize, but... But it's nice to reference
this. This was as of yesterday, midday, so I don't know if they got to it
I'm sure we'll have that for the quote. It's just, okay.
We would like to see those comments as well.
I have another question, too. I know this is going to be a very long-term project, but in specific to the areas, like especially over and near the water department's property, is there a time frame for that piece of the project? You know, how long will it be opened up for the building of that center? How long will
the disturbance be going on?
Yeah.
That's something that's probably design-built. Once the design-built team gets awarded a contract, we'll propose that to us, how to stage the project, what areas to stage. We'll have temporary easements laid out in right-of-way plans, which you'll be able to see once we accept those. We'll show the limits that they have to work within. As far as the durations, I mean, we can speculate on it, but we don't know until the design-built team proposes to us how to build this project.
But it will be built during phase one, which is the first Milcon, the new bridge. So it'll be built within the first year and a half.
I couldn't tell you if it's going to be 2 months or 8 months until they propose where they're going to stage and how they're going to sequence their work within phase one. We wouldn't be able to tell you that.
And that'll be work in concert with the rerunning of the water department lines, which basically run from the water department adjacent to the new abutment location, then brought across, and it'll basically follow the right-of-way line on water park land, and the slope easement coming up, and actually the pipes will be between the basin, the new basin, and the right-of-way line between the water park land and the highway. And then it'll follow up the old stub of the old ferry road. Some years ago, and that's what's now up in the street.
When are you going to anticipate getting the results of the peer review?
Friday.
Thursday or Friday, we should be emailing it to
you. Yeah. Well, I'll just do that immediately.
Facebook will be emailing it to you.
Yeah, the 23rd was the deadline, or the expert, then the work of the contract. The engineer probably won't have his review done until the following week at the earliest, and I think he wanted to wait until he saw the FSC review before finalizing his review. But he's looking at it now, so we'll have some feedback from him as well. And if there's any questions, we could obviously try to answer those prior to the next meeting so that we have the benefit of that as well.
With us tonight is Mr.
Dan
Glenn from Facebook and Dog.de. He's a stormwater engineer. He's been listening in on all these meetings. So,
we plan on getting a report by the Thursday. It will be the report from FST will be stormwater related, and then there will be a separate report regarding the wetland portion of the project also.
Will that be this week also?
Yes. It'll be together. It's just being done by a different
another firm.
Dave wants some comments by it, so.
I had talked to him yesterday about his address. He's looking at it.
Anything else? I'll ask the public, but I know there's no public.
For or against the project?
Would you like us to continue?
Right, so let's see what the
is. Is January 3rd, is that what we're able to do?
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Motion.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We'll let them clear out.
the tax dollars at work.
Could you guys move out into the hallway, please?
Yeah,
so
we got
to finish this up. All right. We have an order of conditions for the Caladinos, 23 Phillips Drive.
Any special conditions on that? The only other action we had tonight was a positive determination.
Andy, were you here when we informed Mr. Fielder?
Yes. Yeah, I came in and was in charge. I didn't see that discussion.
For your short little segue there,
and you talked at all about the actual structures of boards underneath the.
No, yes. But you almost said it was okay. Built on piles.
I guess I could do a photograph of what a pile looks like.
Second. I second. All in favor? We're issuing an order of conditions.
Oh.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right. Do we have anything else? Is there anything else?
Do we have to sign the...
Well, I guess
We got to sign the positive determination.
RDA. I have the.
Please, first.
Oh,
I
see.
I've been trying to get a response back from the.
That's a lawyer's scrawl.
I've been trying to get a response.
As opposed to an engineer's scrawl.
I know nothing. I was not here that night.
According to Mr. Billy, the building commissioner had said that that he could do the addition with new supports, but the existing house could stay as it is without any new support. And I found that surprising, given what I had seen this. I thought, well, let me find out from the building commissioner. So I've been trying to get a conversation with him to look at the plan and the photograph and say, you know, how did you come to this conclusion or whether that's actually... CMU block, and then there's basically a stump, and then there's a couple of blocks and things piled up on top. It's surprising as to how it got so diverse in the
and why it's still standing.
And there were any walls all around the perimeter except for the wood.
There's the side towards the street, the boulevard is actually a grade, so there's no ability for water. It was actually storm event really drawn through there, but on the other side, because these panels that break away, so if the panels break away and the water's flowing through there, I guess is the whole thing would be coming down.
I would think so.
Yeah.
It's present condition.
Okay. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Thank you.
Merry Christmas, everybody.